Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Kiribada Dare Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chadi Yamuna Tiravana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jana Vallabha Kiribada Dare Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Kiribada Dare Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tihiravana Chari Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Continued readings from Granthara, Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, 19th Chapter, Text 14. Titles in chapter, The Island of Jambudvip. Yathai kila kushumika kamalampata Sute shudare shudhane shuchintayan Shankhya vidvan kulivadarayad Yastasya yanta shrama eva kevalam Yathaiki kamushika kamalampata Sute shudhare shudhane shuchintayan Shankheta vidvan kukalevarathayad Yastasya yanta shama eva kevalam Yatha, as Aika, in the present life, Mushmika, in the expected future life. Kamalampata, a person who is very attached to lusty desires for bodily enjoyment. Suteshu, children. Dareshu, wife. Dhaneshu, wealth. Chintayan, thinking about. Shankita, is afraid. Vidvan, a person advanced in spiritual knowledge. Kukalevara, of this body, which is full of stool and urine. Antayat, because of loss. Yaha, anyone. Tasya, his. Yanta, endeavors. Shamaha, a waste of time and energy. Eva, certainly. Kevalam, only. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. Materialists are generally very attached to their present bodily comforts and to the bodily comforts they expect in the future. Therefore, they are always absorbed in thoughts of their wives, children, and wealth, and are afraid of giving up their bodies, which are full of stool and urine. If a person engaged in Krishna consciousness, however, is also afraid of giving up his body, what is the use of his having labored to study the shastras? It was simply a waste of time. Purport. At the time of death, a materialist thinks of his wife and children. He is absorbed with thinking how they will live and who will take care of them after he leaves. Consequently, he is never prepared to give up his body. Rather, he wants to continue to live in his body to serve his society, family, friends, and so on. Therefore, by practicing the mystic yoga system, one must become detached from bodily relationships. If despite practicing bhakti yoga and studying all the Vedic literature, one is afraid of giving up his bad body, which is the cause of all his suffering, what is the use of his attempts to advance in spiritual life? The secret of success in practicing yoga is to become free from bodily attachments. Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Deha Smriti Nahayara Samsara Bandhana Kahantara. One whose practice has freed him from the anxieties of bodily needs is no longer in conditional life. Such a person is freed from conditional bondage. A person in Krishna consciousness must fully discharge his devotional duties without material attachment. Then his liberation is guaranteed. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadhamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanan Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Translation repeated. Materialists are generally very attached to their present bodily comforts and to the bodily comforts they expect in the future. Therefore, they are always absorbed in thoughts of their wives, children, and wealth, and are afraid of giving up their bodies, which are full of stool and urine. If a person engaged in Krishna consciousness, however, is also afraid of giving up his body, what is the use of his having labored to study the shastras? It was simply a waste of time. So, very nice verse, very important principles that we'll try to just take a look at. And if we have time also, I was thinking of maybe covering the next verses, the last in this section of prayers. And these are also being directed to Nara Narayan Rishi. We were hearing these continued prayers explaining his position as the most powerful saintly sage, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although having accepted a material body, he's unaffected by bodily tribulations. And last class we were hearing the explanation of the process, how yogis give up the material body with full detachment simply by placing their minds on the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the perfection of yoga. So Maharaj was explaining that point. And so here we're hearing of the unfortunate fate of materialists, but also those who practice devotional service but remain in the bodily concept of life. That despite their endeavors to study Shastra or even perform devotional activities, if the misconception that I'm the body is still present, if that layer of false ego has not been removed through one's devotional practice, then unfortunately those results don't bear fruit, and one remains in the cycle of birth and death. So in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining the nature of how the materialist quits his body. In the Bhagavad Gita it said, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajanti ante kalebiram tam tam evaiti konteya sadatad bhava bhavita. Whatever one remembers at the time of death, that state he will attain without fail. So it's explained that of our different attachments, that which is most prominent in our heart at the time of death determines our next life. So that's should be a quite startling realization or point that we can meditate on, and we can see generally the way people live their lives is going to determine their next life. You know, despite different proclamations of adherence to certain religions, religious beliefs, the real measure is the nature of their consciousness. Doesn't matter which dogma you accept, which principles you claim to follow. The real measure is how have you lived your life, and that determines what your state of consciousness will be. So generally, it's explaining here that a materialist, he thinks of wife and children, objects that are very dear. Specifically, it mentions how they will live and who will take care of them after he leaves. So we immediately observe that if that false ego is not destroyed, one's still in the egoistic concept that I'm actually a controller or a proprietor. These are actually my wife and my children. So if I don't take care of them, who will? Such a consciousness indicates that one, of course, has not actually accepted Krishna as the only protector and maintainer of all living entities. So even a Krishna conscious householder, he's surrendered to Krishna. It doesn't mean that there's no feeling for perhaps his wife or family, but he's surrendering that he knows actually Krishna is the one who can protect and maintain them. It's not my position. And my sphere of protection is very limited, actually. It's hardly anything without Krishna's mercy. I have no capability. So Krishna is the ultimate protector of everyone. So the materialist, he's never prepared to give up his body. Rather, he wants to continue to live in his body and serve his society, family, and friends. Therefore, even trying to do good work or trying to serve others, if the false ego is still there, it all becomes, it's explained here, shrama eva kevalam, that it's actually just a waste of time, because those activities will never actually benefit anyone unless the aspect of transcendental knowledge is included. By practicing the mystic yoga system, one must become detached from bodily relationships. If despite practicing bhakti yoga and studying all the Vedic literature, one is afraid of giving up his bad body, which is the cause of all his suffering, what is the use of his attempts to advance in spiritual life? So one of the fundamental and critical understandings that we must have is that the material world is not the place of happiness. In other words, it's similar in line with the bodily concept of life is considering that this world is not such a bad place that I can find some suitable. You know, we hear about death. There's rumors, you know, of death, but it's not such a bad place. We can live peacefully here and execute our. But actually, it becomes very important, and Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, that one has to actually develop a very pessimistic view of this material world and life. Because what that does is that it purifies our intelligence. So long as our intelligence is still considering that, oh, this is not so bad, I can find a little happiness here, then the determination actually to give it up does not arise. And there's this verse describing the one-pointed intelligence. Vyavasyatmika bhuti ekeha kurunandana bahushaka hinantascha buddhayo vyavasayanam. Without that intelligence, actually, our energy becomes diversified. Our conviction to serve Krishna is not able to actually manifest. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayaparita chetasa vyavasayatmika bhuti samadhona vidyate. That for the minds of those who are still in the minds of those who are still attached to material opulence and sense enjoyment, the resolute determined for Krishna consciousness does not take place for devotional service. So understand not only that we're the body, but that the world around us is a very miserable place. Actually, we should try to shatter the illusions when we see them or when we come across them. Actually, this is a nice place. The commercial industry, the marketing world, all these things, they're out of ignorance. They're trying to convince you, no, this is great, you can enjoy. But the devotee, he never buys into that. He always can see through the illusion that, no, this is not the place of enjoyment. This is not a place of permanent residence. Actually, any attempt to solve the miseries of this world is just a band-aid, because this world, by nature, you can't have lasting happiness. And so, of course, it says here that the body is the cause of all his suffering. So a person in Krishna consciousness must fully discharge his devotional duties without material attachment. Then his liberation is guaranteed. So this is our task. I was hoping to continue and read one more text here. Therefore, O Lord, O Transcendence, kindly help us by giving us the power to execute bhakti yoga, so that we can control our restless minds and fix them upon you. We are all infected by your illusory energy. Therefore, we are very attached to the body, which is full of stool and urine, and to anything related with the body. Except for devotional service, there is no way to give up this attachment. Therefore, kindly bestow upon us this benediction. So this is a very important prayer, because it's actually indicating the means how one comes out of that situation. That actually, unless one humbly petitions the Lord, begging for his mercy, then one remains in this bodily conception, life after life. Purport, the Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Pavamad Bhakto Madhyajimam Namaskuru. The perfect yoga system consists of always thinking of Krishna, always engaging in devotional service, always worshipping Krishna, and always offering obeisances unto him. Unless we practice this yoga system, our illusory attachment for this bad body, which is full of stool and urine, is impossible to give up. The perfection of yoga consists of giving up attachment for this body and bodily relationships, and transferring that attachment to Krishna. We are very attached to material enjoyment, but when we transfer the same attachment to Krishna, we traverse the path of liberation. One has to practice this yoga system and none other. So the principle of attachment is there. That's not the problem, actually. The problem is where that affinity is directed. So in the material conception of life, it's extended to my body and those in relation to my body, family. But Prabhupada's explaining the perfection of yoga consists of giving up attachment for this body and transferring that attachment to Krishna, understanding actually that I'm not a part of this family, but I'm a part of Krishna's family. That is actually what the soul is looking for, although in the wrong direction in the material world. And Prabhupada explains one has to practice this yoga system and none other, and that is always thinking of Krishna, always engaging in devotional service, always worshiping Krishna and always offering obeisances to him. So we may become we may be already familiar with this verse, but if we actually examine it, it's quite a high order to always think of Krishna at all times. Always engaging in devotional service, always worshiping Krishna, and always offering obeisances. So sometimes we may be doing our service, but we can always check ourselves. Am I thinking of Krishna? Am I meditating, or am I remembering Krishna? This is the injunction, the most important injunction in our devotional process, to always remember Krishna, never forget him. All of the rules and prohibitions are based on that principle. And here we're hearing actually the means how we can do that is actually by humbly petitioning the Lord. Please kindly help us by giving us the power to execute bhakti yoga so that we can control our restless minds and fix them upon you. Without the Lord's help, we can't actually complete the yoga praha. It's impossible to control our own mind. So I wanted to just take a look at the Krishna book, because as we're hearing that we have to fix our mind on Krishna. So we all appreciate hearing the pastimes, but I have a question. Is that I was hearing, what is the sign of an advanced devotee? How can you tell who is an advanced devotee? It's a question we can answer. Yes. Well, the question is an advanced devotee, so sure, you could say Uttamadhikari, but... always engaged in serving. Okay. Very nice. Okay, back to the... Mm-hmm. Yes. Anything else? Any other ideas? There's... yeah. Doesn't waste time, right? What else? He's tolerant. Okay. He talks about nothing but Krishna. Okay, very nice. Anyone else want to share? No? These are all, of course, very good answers. But I was hearing a class wherein it was explained that actually the measure of an advanced devotee is one who has great eagerness to hear about Krishna. That this is how we can determine our advancement, based on the degree of our eagerness to hear Krishna katha. So, just continuing with this theme of one should always meditate on Krishna, I thought I might just share maybe one quick pastime, because this is helping us cultivate a means of transcending the bodily concept of life by remembering Krishna. And we'll read one commentary also. Now, even in the introduction to Krishna book, Prabhupada is, you can perceive how much Prabhupada has taste for hearing Krishna katha. Of course, he translated all of these literatures in great ecstasy. He said, my purports are like my ecstasies. So you can see by the life of Prabhupada how much taste he had. So if we just lend our ears to hear from Prabhupada, we're hearing this nice point that the ruchi, Jai Jagannath was mentioning, that the ruchi is injected actually by the sadhu, because he has actual taste, that he can give the taste which affords faith. We can't develop faith without taste. So when an advanced devotee is speaking, it's imbued with his taste for the subject matter. So just by hearing that, we also get a little bit of that mercy. The supreme abode of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, is also described in the Brahma Samhita as the abode of Chintamani. That abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, is full of palaces made of touchstone. There are trees called desire trees, and the cows are called Surabhi. The Lord is served there by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. His name is Govinda, the primeval Lord, and he is the cause of all causes. There the Lord plays his flute, his eyes are like lotus petals, and the color of his body is like that of a beautiful cloud. On his head is a peacock feather. He is so attractive that he excels thousands of cupids. Lord Krishna gives only a little hint in the Gita of his personal abode, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna actually appears with all his paraphernalia and demonstrates his activities in Vrindavan, then at Mathura, then at Dwaraka. The subject matter of this book will gradually reveal all these activities. And one area that I wanted to take a look, one pastime that is very familiar to us, but in relation to one thing in the verse, I thought I might just read a little bit of the killing of Dhenukasura and see how this relates to this verse that we're reading. So it's kind of a short pastime, but in this way, Sri Krishna, along with his elder brother Balaram, passed the childhood age known as Kumara and stepped into the age of Pogunda from the 6th up to the 10th year. At that time, all the cowherd men conferred and agreed to give those boys who had passed their 5th year charge of the cows in the pasturing ground. Given charge of the cows, Krishna and Balaram traversed Vrindavan, purifying the land with their lotus footprints. Accompanied by the cowherd boys and Balaram, Krishna brought forward the cows and played on his flute as he entered the forest of Vrindavan, which was full of flowers, vegetables, and pasturing grass. The Vrindavan forest was as sanctified as the clear mind of a devotee, and was full of bees, flowers, and fruits. There were chirping birds and clear water lakes with waters that could relieve one of all fatigue. Sweet-smelling breezes blew always, refreshing the body and mind. Krishna, with his friends and Balaram, entered the forest, and seeing the favorable situation, desired to enjoy the atmosphere to the fullest extent. Krishna saw the trees overloaded with fruits and fresh twigs, bending down to touch the ground as if welcoming him by touching his lotus feet. He was very much pleased by the behavior of the trees, fruits, and flowers, and he began to smile, realizing their desires. In this way, Lord Krishna and Balaram began to enjoy the residents of Vrindavan to their full satisfaction as they herded the calves and cows on the bank of the Yamuna. In some places, Krishna and Balaram were accompanied by their friends. The boys were singing, imitating the humming sound of the drones, and accompanying Krishna and Balaram, who were garlanded with forest flowers. While walking, the boys sometimes imitated the quacking sound of the swans in the lakes. When they saw the peacocks dancing, they imitated them before Krishna. Krishna also moved his neck, imitating the dancing and making his friends laugh. While Krishna was thus engaged in his transcendental pastimes, exhibiting his internal potency in the company of the supermost fortunate cowherd boys, there occurred another chance for him to exhibit the superhuman powers of Godhead. His most intimate friends Sridham, Subal, and Stoka Krishna addressed Krishna and Balaram with great love and affection. Thus, dear Balaram, you are very powerful. Your arms are very strong. Dear Krishna, you are very expert in killing all kinds of disturbing demons. Will you kindly note that just near this place there is a big forest of the name Talavan? This forest is full of palm trees, and all the trees are filled with fruits. Some have fallen down, and some are very ripe, even in the trees. It's a very nice place, but because of a great demon, Dhenukasura, it is very difficult to go there. No one can reach the trees to collect the fruits. Dear Krishna and Balaram, this demon is present there in the form of an ass, and he is surrounded by similar demon friends who have assumed the same shape. All of them are very strong, so it is difficult to approach this place. Dear brothers, you are the only persons who can kill such demons. Other than you, no one can go there for fear of being killed. Not even animals go there, and no birds are living there. They have all left. One can only appreciate the sweet aroma that is coming from that place. It appears that up until now, no one has tasted the sweet fruits there, either on the tree or on the ground. Dear Krishna, to tell you frankly, we are very attracted by this sweet aroma. Dear Balaram, if you like, let us go there and enjoy these fruits. The aroma of the fruits is now spread everywhere. Don't you smell it from here? Of course, they're all pure devotees, so it's not that in the same sense that we desire some sweet-tasting object. Everything is completely spiritual and pure in the spiritual world. Now we'll get to the incident here. When Balaram and Krishna were thus petitioned by their intimate friends, they were inclined to please them, and with smiling faces, they proceeded toward the forest. surrounded by all their friends. Immediately upon entering the Talavan, Balaram began to yank the trees with his arms, exhibiting the strength of an elephant. Because of this jerking, all the ripe fruits fell to the ground. Upon hearing the sound of the falling fruits, the demon Dhenukasura, who was living there in a form of an ass, approached with great force, shaking the whole field so that all the trees moved as if there were an earthquake. The demon appeared before Balaram and kicked his chest with his hind legs. At first, Balaram did not say anything, but with great anger, the demon again kicked him more vehemently. This time, Balaram immediately caught hold of the legs of the ass with one hand, and wheeling him around, threw him into the treetops. While he was being wheeled around by Balaram, the demon lost his life. Balaram threw the demon into the biggest palm tree about, and the demon's body was so heavy that the palm tree fell upon other trees, and several fell down. It appeared as if a great hurricane was passing through the forest, and all the trees were falling down one after another. This exhibition of extraordinary strength is not astonishing, because Balaram is the personality of Godhead known as Anantashesh Naga, who is holding all the planets on the hoods of his millions of heads. He maintains the whole cosmic manifestation exactly as horizontal and vertical threads hold the weaving of a cloth. Then, after the demon had been thrown into the treetops, all the friends and associates of Dhenukasura immediately assembled and attacked Balaram and Krishna with great force. They were determined to retaliate and avenge the death of their friend. But Krishna and Balaram caught each of the asses by the hind legs and exactly in the same way wheeled them around. Thus they killed all of them and threw them into the palm trees. So then, I'll just conclude here as they return to Vrindavan. When Krishna and Balaram entered the village of Vrindavan along with their friends, they played their flutes and the boys praised their uncommon activities in the forest. Their faces were decorated with tilak and smeared with the dust raised by the cows, and Krishna's head was decorated with a peacock feather. Both he and Balaram played their flutes, and the young gopis were joyous to see Krishna returning home. All the gopis in Vrindavan remained very morose on account of Krishna's absence. All day they were thinking of Krishna in the forest or of him herding cows in the pasture. When they saw Krishna returning, all their anxieties were immediately relieved, and they began to look at his face the way drones hover over the honey of the lotus flower. When Krishna entered the village, the young gopis smiled and laughed. Krishna, while playing the flute, enjoyed the beautiful smiling faces of the gopis. And this continues as he returns home. And so, we know that actually in the pastimes of Krishna, the demons are symbolic also of anartas. And so I always find it very fascinating and fruitful to examine that in context of what we read. So in this situation, does anyone recall what Dhenukasura, which anarta he is representing? False ego, okay. Okay, yeah. So let's see here. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given some nice explanations, some very important points that we can benefit from, that this demon, Dhenukasura, actually represents gross materialistic intelligence, ignorance of spiritual knowledge. This is what we're hearing, also the bodily concept of life, actually, that materialistic intelligence, when it's not in a state of purification, it's still identifying with false ego. So our intelligence is completely misdirected. Even though, as we're hearing, one can study all the shastras, do all the devotional activities, if the intelligence is still materially directed, if that illusion hasn't been dispelled, then all those activities are useless. Now, what's interesting is that all of Krishna's pastimes, all of the demons that Krishna kills, are also in a category, and the demons that Balaram kills are in a separate category. So I'm sure we've heard this before, but it's always fruitful to re-examine this point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, "The devotee who worships the holy name should first petition the Lord for the strength to cast out all these unfavorable tendencies and should pray thus before Lord Hari on a daily basis. And all of the other demons are representing different anarthas. By doing this regularly, by calling out for the strength to cast out these unfavorable tendencies, the devotee's heart will eventually become purified. Sri Krishna has killed a number of demons which may arise in the kingdom of the heart. So in order to destroy these problems, a devotee must cry very humbly before the Lord and admit defeat. Then the Lord will nullify all contaminations. So through cultivation of humility actually is the key to getting free from the anarthas, is what's being indicated here. If one can just very humbly cry before the Lord and admit defeat, admit that actually I can't, that's the illusion actually, is that we're still under the conception that I can do it. You know, false ego is directing us to think that I'm able to purify myself, as opposed to the natural position of a devotee who's simply dependent on Krishna, seeing that only Krishna can deliver me from this situation. Now, that was actually in reference to the demons killed by Krishna. And this demon that we just read about, Dhenukasura, was actually killed by Balaram. So there's some important points about the demons that are killed by Balaram. Balaram gives spiritual strength to overcome anything that opposes devotion to Krishna. Therefore, Balaram is the original spiritual master. So he supplies the spiritual strength that allows one to overcome anarthas. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also explains the nature of the pastimes that are killed by Balaram. If a devotee cries out humbly and sincerely to Lord Krishna to remove these demonic qualities represented by the demons killed by Krishna, Krishna himself will remove those evils in the manner that we described. But the devotee must personally work to drive out the anarthas represented by the demons killed by Lord Balaram. This is a mystery of Vraj Bhajan. The aspirant must personally remove these strong impediments with his best care and efforts by obtaining the mercy of Krishna. If a devotee's humility becomes very deep and intense, Krishna will be merciful. In that case, the feeling of Lord Balaram will arise in his mind and quickly destroy these demoniac qualities. Then one will gradually improve in his cultivation of bhajan. The ass demon Dhenukasura represents the bad mentality of overburdened load carrying. It's another point mentioned. So, in context also of the other definition of ignorance of spiritual identity, what could that refer to? Overburdened load carrying. Thinking that I'm the body. Because if I'm considering that I'm in the bodily context, I'm this body, then what a huge burden I just have to carry around. Because we know that's not who I am. But if we're doing even devotional activities, we're carrying that big burden, it's actually taxing our energy. We're not able to engage properly in devotional service because we're carrying this huge burden of in this body. That means old age, disease, death, family attachments, all of these concomitant illusions. Dhenukasura causes complete and total ignorance of one's eternal identity. It also stimulates foolish misconceptions about the eternal nature of the holy name. Plus, it misdirects one with delusions about what is actually worshipable. We can see that in the bodily concept, people are thinking many different things are worshipable. Worship family, society, worship materialistic leaders, all these things are worshipable because of false ego. But in as a soul, the soul understands actually the only worshipable thing is the Supreme Soul. Dhenukasura and other asses, ignorance of the truth due to idiocy, loss of knowledge of one's spiritual identity, ignorance concerning the non-difference of Krishna and his name, and ignorance of our relationship with Krishna. So, this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is encouraging, that these type of anarthas, actually, these two anarthas, Prolambasura and Dhenukasura, that we have to make a very strong personal effort. And the demons killed by Krishna, the other anarthas, by becoming very humble and praying to the Lord, Krishna can remove those anarthas. But these, actually, the devotee has to work very hard. And so we were hearing in this text that we read, therefore, kindly help us by giving us power to execute bhakti yoga so we can control our restless minds and fix them upon you. We are all infected by your illusory energy, therefore we are very attached to the body, which is full of stool and urine. Except for devotional service, there is no way to give up this attachment, therefore kindly bestow upon us this benediction. And in the purport we heard, the perfect yoga system consists of always thinking of Krishna, manmana, always engaging in devotional service, always worshipping Krishna, and always offering obeisances. Unless we practice this yoga system, our illusory attachment for this bad body is impossible to give up. So this is, of course, in line with these prayers that have been offered to Narayan, that save and accept for devotional service, for always hearing about, always remembering Krishna. That's really the principle, is to always remember Krishna. Without that opportunity, there's no way to get out of this bodily illusion. And therefore, in spite of one's practicing Krishna consciousness, if a person is also afraid of giving up his body, then what is the use of his having labored to study the shastras? It was simply a waste of time. So just a general encouragement that we continue to try to develop a taste for the pastimes hearing about Krishna, and understanding that that's our responsibility to actually cultivate a real spiritual identity by engaging very strongly in devotional service. And with the mercy of Balaram, actually, petitioning the Lord for his mercy to remove anartas, and anticipating the strength of Balaram to come into our life, because by Balaram's power, then the anartas can be removed, actually. So I'll just stop there, and I appreciate everyone's attention. I apologize for, you know, the shortcomings of my classes. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Terence Rue.
Hare Krishna, thank you for class. I have a more or less a question in response to your class in the verse that we read. But before I comment on my question, 4 years ago, like around August, my father was at this high school reunion in the park, and he was talking to a friend of his name was Dave, who grew up with him in the neighborhood. So they were talking, and the discussion was like, they were talking about family. At the time, his friend Dave was like married and had like children and whatnot. And he was basically just talking to my father about how much he loved his kids. Mm-hmm. So anyways, long story short, within them talking, it was like gunfire in the park. And in the commotion, when both of them fell, like his friend was hit. His friend was actually shot in the back, mm-hmm. and he died instantly. As he was like talking to my father, he was actually showing him a wallet with his children, and he was just, you know, basically he was just happy. He was talking about his family. Mm-hmm. So as like I listened to your class, I was thinking about that incident when it happened.
Yeah.
And more or less at the time of his death, he's basically just telling my father how much he loved his family, and you know how him and his wife had a great marriage and all this, like what you would think is like great things.
Yeah.
And okay, and my question in response to that is, they say this was by all material standpoints like a good person. So what would be the consciousness of someone like dying instantly like that? Like what would be their next birth if, you know, he lived a pretty pious life. He was a good man. But in the process of him speaking about his family, his life was just taken away. Yeah. Where he had no he didn't even know it was going to happen.
Well, unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, the destination of most people is not a very happy place. Prabhupada would sometimes say that people in Kali Yuga, they're on their way to hell. So that's pretty scary that, you know, we may not go out and say that, but the way that people live in Kali Yuga is so completely aloof from Vedic culture that their activities practically from day to night are sinful. Now, in a society that is used to that paradigm, it doesn't, that may seem shocking, but for, you know, a Vedic student, it's completely beyond what the scope of Dharma or religion or service. It's completely devoid generally of a conception of relationship with God. So the Asuric mentality breeds an Asuric birth in the next life. You mentioned this individual may be pious, but again, what is the conception of piety? In the material world, they say, oh, he's a nice person. Meaning, okay, maybe he had affection for family and friends, a nice person. But unfortunately, the animals also have affection for their family. To be affectionate to one's family is not a very noble quality. It's not a very exalted quality. It's natural for anyone who takes birth in the material world. So the standard of piety also is, it's not according to the laws of nature. Now, in perhaps a Vedic culture, a pious life, then they may have some, elevation. But in Kali Yuga, if one just lives a normal kind of lifestyle that we see, and they remember their family, then they'll probably have to certainly take birth again, and unlikely to achieve a higher planetary system. Prabhupada said those in the mode of passion take birth on this planet, but if there's an abundance of sinful activity, like if people are eating meat their whole life, we know the penalty for that. So generally, there's going to be some punishment that the soul may have to undergo, and then perhaps taking birth based on how they live their life in either an animal or human form. Yes, so it's very scary, actually. This is very sobering. This is the problem, that the ignorance is, it's so subtle that it just covers our intelligence. We don't even consider, like, the gravity of the situation. People think life is just the laws of nature are so strict, though. They're merciless. And just now, we're just beginning to wake up, actually, a lot of us. We're just beginning to, like, open our eyes for the first time. We've just been sleeping in ignorance for so long. We never even consider what's going to happen after this life, or yeah, everything's going to be fine, or even in modern religions, but that they're not exactly following. So that's how I feel like we're just coming out of this sleep and just opening, like, wow, we're in a very serious situation. On the other side, the power of Krishna consciousness by one who just takes up the principles, four regulative principles. You're avoiding sinful activity if you engage in Krishna service. Just by a tiny bit of progress, you're guaranteed a human birth in your next life. And if one who actually tries to realize God, they're guaranteed birth in a Shuchi or Srimad family, the family of a pious person, or an aristocratic situation where they can continue their progress. So therefore, then, that's our mission, that's part of our duty, actually, that people don't know what their situation is. So Prabhupada's whole mission is let everyone know. Don't just keep the knowledge for ourselves. It's entwined with our whole sampradaya, the Gaudiya Sampradaya, and the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And the chanting of the holy name, of course, is the most powerful and the prominent point of propagation.
Would this verse also apply for like Grihastha Varnashram? Because just within our own temple, we have a nice Grihastha community. But the Grihasthas in our community are also engaged in Krishna service. So would they have to still take a human birth, just baby, because they are in a family life setting? I mean, I'm asking because I'm just curious, just
That's a good
in
question.
reference
Now,
to
this
this
is referring
verse.
to a materialist who's attached to his wife and family.
Okay.
The Grihastha devotee, it doesn't really matter what ashram one's in. The principle is that one should always remember Krishna. So Grihastha devotees also have great opportunity to go back to Godhead, certainly, and attain anything less than that, another birth, etc. Those who take up Krishna consciousness are guaranteed such an amazing outcome. But the real outcome is that we can finish the whole path. That's the whole point. The point is not to make some progress. Actually, the real point is the human form of life is meant for God realization. And unless we achieve that, one's considered an atmaha. We didn't give our soul the right opportunity to go back to Godhead. We messed up, actually, if we don't go back to Godhead. So that's the standard and that's the goal. But certainly any auspicious outcome would come from anyone who's practicing Krishna consciousness. Thank you, Rubak. Luke wants to share something.
Hare Krishna. There were a couple of things I wanted to share.
Sure, we'll tell you.
Thanks, Prabhu. On the second question about the Grihastha Ashram, Vedic culture recommends Grihastha Ashram last maximum 25 years, and then at the age of 50, or roughly after one has gone through half of his life, then he transitions into the Vanaprastha Ashram and executes austerities pursuing spiritual perfection. So Grihastha Ashram is a temporary ashram, just like all the ashrams in this temporary material world. And the first point you're getting at this point, like that, you know, do we really know what good qualities are? But even a so-called good person, like according to the Vedic standard of mode of goodness, Prabhupada would often give the example of, you know, these modes of nature, externally they look significantly different, but actually it's just like the difference between an iron chain, a silver chain, and a gold chain. As long as we're under the modes of nature, we're prisoners. So Krishna consciousness is not meant to teach us how to be good people in the material
The material
sense.
sense, right?
Real goodness is pure goodness, Vishuddha Sattva. And you were mentioning this point that we can determine how good we are in the transcendental sense according to our attraction for hearing about Krishna. This verse, it ends, Shrama Eva Kevalam. I was thinking of this other verse from the Bhagavatam, which you all know. Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam is the end of it. That any
What's the verse?
activity,
You know the verse.
huh?
You know the verse.
Not the whole one. I mean, it's 1, 2, 10,
Does anyone know that verse?
or 11. Ankit, do you know this one? Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam? What is the beginning of the Sanskrit?
Savai pumso paro dharmo
No.
ito bhakti.
That's 1, 2, 6. You want to look it up? It's Srimad Bhagavatam 1, 2, 10 or 11, something like that.
Yeah, I didn't look at the Sanskrit till just when I read the verse,
Yeah.
so I didn't see it before, but I was also thinking of that.
So anyway, this Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. So Shrama means useless. Oh, here we go. Kamasya Nandriya Pritir. No, that's not it, sorry. That's 11, let's see.
You
11,
have it,
10, maybe
Param?
it's 9.
Yes, I think it's 14, 15, 16.
Let's see. Yeah.
What is it? Yeah, can you read it? Okay, thank you.
So, Shrama means useless.
You want to read the translation for us? Just because we'll get more insight. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll read exactly. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead.
Beautiful.
So even if our activities are so-called good, the real test is, are we becoming more attracted to hearing and chanting about Krishna? So this verse is interesting because it was pointed out by Vimalacharya Prabhupada. Shrama means useless. Eva means certainly. He also means certainly. And Kevalam means only
Only.
or exclusive. Like, so it's these three words, you know, thrown on the end of the Sanskrit verse. And it's not like Suta Goswami is not conscious of what he's saying. He's
Right.
deliberately using three words that mean the same thing to emphasize this point, pound it into our heads, that any activity that does not provoke attraction for Krishna, Krishna bhakti, then that activity is useless, more useless, most useless. It's a waste of time, and it's as good as sinful activity, actually, even if it's so-called pious activity. We were hearing, I think, recently from Zhao Yang, who was mentioning this point, you know, harmful welfare activities. Like, in the name of helping somebody, you're just contributing to their birth and death, you know, repeating birth and death in the material world. So it's an important point. Anyway, thanks for...
Yeah, I think our philosophy requires a little adjustment time before we can... You know, because we come out of the material world, and if we hear these things right away, we're like, what? What are these people? Are just crazy. They're so fanatical. But then you just start practicing. You're like, yeah, this is definitely how it is. Everything else is total nonsense. So there's that period that we go through where, like, okay, yes, I can kind of roll with this. That's the fact. It's useless.
So for people who are a little bit more intellectual, Krishna gives the example that the body is just like clothing. So Prabhupada gives that nice analogy, you know, if there's a person drowning and you save his clothing, then what good does that do the person? So for persons who are a little bit intelligent, then I don't think it's too, you know, you need to like wait before you can reveal this fact that real welfare activity is assisting the soul.
Yeah, that's certainly a very important intellectual point, but I do think that it requires actually not just intelligence, but piety. Like if you go to UChicago or any of these prestigious schools, that they have intelligence, but because they don't have a pious, and they may not have pious credit, so it just sounds completely absurd. If you go to these humanitarian centers, now if they have, but even on, just on the level of intelligence, yeah, if one's smart, if one has brains, Prabhupada would say that, if you have brain, you can understand, but I came to give you brain, because even so many intelligence degrees still, like we would say common sense for devotees, it's just common sense. God exists, people are saying there's no God.
One reporter, sorry, this is my last comment, and I'll give it to Prabhu. He told one reporter, we are preaching the truth, and if you are truthful, you will accept it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we see Anusaham Sahasrasu. Out of many thousands, maybe a truthful person. I think, though, we should, just to keep the schedule, we'll have to stop here. You please comment later if you like. Shkantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Tai Gaur Premanandi.